Joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Ben Ryder. He's the senior writer for SI.com and Sports Illustrated. He's also a New York Times bestseller with the book Astroball. Ben, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's start. I mean, the big headline this week, those two big-name free agents, Keuchel and Kimbrell, were unsigned for so long. They finally got signed. Did you like where they landed? Were they good fits?
They were good fits. They were certainly good fits. In fact, in my Writer 50 rankings of the best 50 free agents that I do each year, I had the Braves as the best landing spot for Keuchel. This was last October, so it only took 7 months, but he ended up there. But look, I'm not surprised that both of these players ended up in the National League, right? You look at the American League, we basically already know which six teams will be battling for those five playoff spots. That league is so kind of polarized. In the NL, there's a lot more ability to make some big moves in the standings. There's only really a couple teams out of it there. A lot of teams are bunched together fighting for those wild card spots. A player like Dallas Keuchel could give you the one or two or three extra wins the Braves will need to win the NL East. Same for Craig Kimbrell for the Cubs in the NL Central.
Ben, you mentioned Dallas Keuchel, and we're based here in Houston. Dallas Keuchel had offers on the table that Scott Boras was telling him to take, and obviously he didn't take them, and he was waiting at his $17.9 million qualifying offer from the Astros. Do you think, looking back on it, he's thinking, I should have taken that offer, or I should have taken some earlier ones, because he's taking a little bit of a pay cut going to the Braves?
Probably. I mean, hindsight is 20/20. Of course, he's emerged as almost a cautionary tale for the fate of players in the current free agent market. Not only did he turn down that $17.9 million qualifying offer from the Astros, after his Cy Young year in 2015, he turned down a five-year $90 million extension. So the offers got worse and worse for Dallas Keuchel. Look, nobody's crying for him, right? He's going to come away with over $40 million over the last 3 or 4 years. But yeah, I'm sure if he could do it again, he might have signed one of those deals the Astros floated to him. But look, it's a gamble. He's the type of pitcher that, for several reasons, teams don't want to invest in. They want the strikeout guys. They don't want the command and control guys. At the end of the day, he's making a good living to play for a good team. And, you know, there's not too much to complain about if you're him.
And do you think his injury history after the Cy Young, he's, you know, lost significant time each season with the Astros. Do you think that also had played a little bit into his free agency? Or
it's a piece of the puzzle. I think more than that is teams looking at slight declines in certain things. As far, you know, his fastball was never hard, but now he doesn't even throw 90 anymore. His strikeout rate has dropped a little bit. His numbers have been up and down. Teams are very into trends, as we know, and projections of players' future value. We're past the days where free agents were paid for what they did in the past. It's all about what teams think they're going to do in the future, as I wrote very extensively in Astroball. Clearly, that was a big part of the calculation with Dallas Keuchel. The flip side of the coin is this is a recent Cy Young winner, pitched in big games. He can be a leader on especially a very young Braves staff. You know, I don't think there's certainly not much risk here for the Braves signing him just for the remainder of the season.
We're talking to Sports Illustrated writer Ben Ryder, also the author of the New York Times bestseller Astroball. Let's talk about the Astros. They have endured a whole swath of injuries, yet are playing very well. Do you think they can sustain this play with these injuries?
I think they can. First of all, this is part of Jeff Luhnow's design for the team. He's never assumes a best-case scenario, right? That's a mistake that a lot of GMs make, or at least used to make. Like, look, these are our nine starters. They're going to be healthy. Our nine starting hitters are going to be healthy. These are our five starting pitchers. They're going to be healthy. Things are going to be great. The team is designed to sustain bad performances, to sustain injuries. That's part of the reason why he is loath to trade any of his top prospects and rarely has. And we see Yordan Alvarez coming up this weekend and hitting a home run in his first game. So, no, I don't think that these injuries to Correa, Altuve, Springer will affect them that much. And the fact is, they've got a heck of a big cushion in the AL West. They're already up 9.5 games. They could stand to suffer even more injuries now than they have already and still be perfectly fine. Of course, the question is, will all these guys come back healthy in October as they didn't quite last year? And clearly a compromised Altuve and Correa was one factor in why they didn't make it past the ALCS.
You mentioned earlier in the American League, and this is certainly true with the Astros, they've got the big lead. They're on their way. There's a stratification in the American League. It's a macro trend. How do you see that changing for baseball?
Well, I mean, the NL is kind of what they want, right? I mean, really, aside from the Marlins and the Giants and perhaps the Reds, everybody else is still involved.
Yep.
But yeah, and this is in part a result of Astro Ball, right? The idea that if you're in it, you're in it. If you're rebuilding, you're rebuilding. You shouldn't waste any money on a team that you don't think is going to win anyway. A lot of copycats out there, certainly in Baltimore, where Jeff Luno's former lieutenant, Mike Elias, is now the GM. They're not going to win for any time soon as they build for the future. A lot of teams out there like that. The Mariners now, Kansas City Royals, the Detroit Tigers, basically everybody who's not the Yankees, Rays, Red Sox, Twins, Indians, and Astros.
So, Ben, was taking a look at the rivalry between the Dodgers and San Francisco, got a little spicier yesterday with that stare down between Madison Bumgarner and Max Muncy. I love that. I like a little sass in baseball. It doesn't have enough. What do you think of that? And is that, why or why not is that good for baseball?
Well, I think it's good. Look, it's good anytime you can have any drama between two rivals. From an optics perspective, obviously it gets fans involved. I actually really liked Madison Bumgarner's response to Max Muncy's quote. It was essentially like, well, if he doesn't want me to watch my ball, he should go get it from the ocean because he hit it into the water out in San Francisco. I like what Madison Bumgarner said. He's like, look, like I know I should be have the let the kids play mindset. Like, I know I should think it's okay, but I just don't. He was honest about it. His emotions got the best of him. But this is certainly the way the game is going, with more demonstrative players, with celebrations being okay. I think it is perfectly fine.
Yeah, I love it. And Madison Bumgarner's, you know, 1 foot. He wants out of San Francisco anyway, so he's feisty as it is. So looking at the Dodgers, this rotation is out of control, and which is not totally unusual for them. Will this be the year that this rotation can take the Dodgers all the way? I mean, to the trophy. Are we going to see Kershaw struggles again? I mean, what gives with that organization? Or do you feel this year is a little bit different?
It's certainly looking different to this point, in part because they have a breakout MVP candidate who's not in the rotation, but in the outfield, in Clay Bellinger. You know, we're talking about this depth idea, and the Dodgers, along with the Astros, were really pioneers in this. You know, the past couple of years, Clayton Kershaw gets hurt every year. It doesn't seem to matter because they have so much built-in depth on that roster. Well, this year I think we're getting a look at what the team would be like if they don't suffer too many injuries, right? Yes, A.J. Pollock's on the shelf right now with a very bad infection in his elbow. But other than that, the roster has been generally healthy this year. This is kind of the optimal Dodgers that we're seeing right now, just destroying all comers. Of course, anything can happen in the playoffs. It's always been a crapshoot. And there'll certainly be a couple of teams, if not from the National League side, but from the American League side, specifically the Astros and the Yankees once they get healthy. And I wouldn't count out the Twins, who might have something to say for the third time's a charm idea for the Dodgers.
We're talking to Ben Ryder of Sports Illustrated. He also has the New York Times bestseller, Astro Ball. So in Houston here, we have Justin Verlander, who's pitching perhaps as well as he ever has. And he's doing it late in his career, relatively late for a starting pitcher. How is he doing this? And is this something you believe is possible now, that pitchers can extend their careers and we're going to see success for many older pitchers?
I do think it's possible. Part of it is advances in training techniques, in medicine, in ways that pitchers can simply stay healthier longer. But part of it is also advances in training, helping pitchers figure out how they can maintain their levels of dominance even as their bodies change. Now, this used to be kind of left up to the pitchers. Some of them would figure it out. Some of them would not. You know, a guy like C.C. Sabathia, once he was no longer a power pitcher, figured out how to become a command and control pitcher halfway through his career. A lot of guys don't figure that out. Now teams have the technology and the strategies to equip aging pitchers to improve in that way on a day-to-day training level. When Justin Verlander came from Detroit to Houston, he said he was amazed at all of the new training tools he had at his disposal. High-speed cameras, all sorts of pitch tracking devices. He is a smart guy. He's always been a tinkerer. It's a combination, really, of keeping your body in shape longer, but also using that experience to keep yourself pitching at a very high level, even as your body ages.
So one pitcher of many years who started slowly, Chris Sale of the Red Sox, now seems to be getting his mojo back. And the Red Sox have had some runs here, but they are not the team they were last year. Do you think in the end we'll find them in the playoffs?
I think so. As we said, they're only trying to beat out one other team at this point for a wild card spot. Looking like the Indians, look, we're not even halfway through the season. A lot can change. But I think they should have the resources and the horses to make it into the playoffs. And I do think there's some very real truth to the idea that there was a World Series hangover, especially for their pitchers. Their pitchers, they did not push them too much over the offseason. They did not throw very much in spring training because they pitched so late into the year last year. Chris Sale was not the only one who started slowly. Basically, all of them did, with the exception of David Price. Now they are rounding into form. Chris Sale's velocity is back up. Eduardo Rodriguez has had a couple of good starts. Seems like the Red Sox, maybe intentionally on some level, started slow. They're kicking into gear now, at least on the pitching side.
All right, that's Ben Ryder. He is from Sports Illustrated. You've got to get his book. It's a New York Times bestseller called Astroball. Ben, thanks so much for joining us on the Boston The Gloss.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.